sex matters, period.
What?
Really?
What?
I'm Judy.
I'm Patricia.
And this is the Sex Matters Podcast. We are going to pull topics out of our hats, grab items from the news, and take questions submitted by you, the listener. So we invite you to join us. Why? Because sex matters, period. Hey, you know, before we dive into the episode, I just want to mention something that Patricia and I are going to talk a little bit about futuristically, something that we've recorded, but I wanted to mention it now because it's come up in conversations that I've had with other folks, and I just want to address it. So when Patricia and I are talking, we tend to talk in male-female partnerships, and we truly and sincerely mean no disrespect. And in our heads, we are accounting for other things that don't always come out of our mouths. And there's a few reasons for that. And we can do better at holding space for non-binary people and for non-typical male-female relationships. It is the relationship that both of us are in currently right now. And so we're kind of speaking from our experience and not necessarily speaking about, you know, same-sex relationships in a space that we don't necessarily have the experience in. And I know for me, most of the relationship work that I'm doing is with straight couples due to the nature of the work that I am doing. Patricia has certainly said that a lot of the information can certainly translate to same-sex couples. And I have certainly heard that as well. So I hope that people are not discounting the information that we have to share if you're in a same-sex couple. And we do try to acknowledge that. And I acknowledge, and Patricia has acknowledged, that we probably don't do as great of a job as we could and that we fall into speech patterns. So please understand that. I really think the information is still valuable no matter what sex or gender you identify with. Nothing is 100%, and we're a lot of times speaking in generalities, and there's always exceptions to the rules. So I hope that makes sense to you. I hope you hear what I'm saying and you hear my intent and our intent. And I am sure right now as I am saying this that I am forgetting to include thoughts and comments that I should be including and explaining. So do not hesitate to send a comment or an email via Facebook, via the website, where you can ask questions. You can certainly comment there as well. So I'm going to leave it at that for the moment and happy to have any feedback, but it was something that I just wanted to address because I know that we do that in this particular episode and it's not meant to leave anybody out or discount same-sex relationships or anything like that. So please do hear that. Have patience with us and know that our minds and our hearts are completely open and welcoming.
Woohoo!
Yahoo!
Wow. All right. Thank me.
This is week 2 of our little featurette of BDSM. And last week we talked about what even is BDSM? What does it look like? What does it stand for? What does it look like to experience it? What is healthy? So, you know, a little bit of the baseline. So if you're coming into this and it feels like you're coming in the middle of a conversation, well, you are a little bit, but the first part is to be had the week before. So go check that out. We're going to talk about what does a healthy BDSM relationship look like. And it started all with a listener's question. So let me actually read that again too, so we're all on the same page. We had a question submitted by Justine. Is BDSM a healthy sexual activity? As a feminist, I'm instantly turned off. How can this be a loving sexual dynamic? And so you talked about, again, we talked about what that looks like. You gave us some experiences from your world and the experiences you have had to help yourself even understand it more as a sexual authenticity coach. So you could speak to it well when you're working with people and hearing what people are talking about, going through, wanting, needing, etc. And Now we're going to kind of dive into some of the other nitty-gritty of what do those relationships look like. But I want to get back to something that you said, because it relates very much to the person who asked the question. So you talked about your own relationship, and you decided in the beginning of your relationship that you would be the submissive. And part of what that means for you is that decisions are made by your partner. But again, that doesn't mean that your opinion, your thoughts, it's a full discussion. It's not a complete, you know, yes, sir, whatever is okay. Your feelings, everything is taken into consideration because it's that communication, that trust.
Exactly.
Yes. So how do you, you know, and again, when we talk about the word feminism and being a feminist, like that in and of itself is this huge continuum of what that looks like and what that means to each of us, right? There are some people who believe you cannot be a submissive in a BDSM relationship because you're giving away your power. There are other people who believe, man, that is when I am in my, yes, I am a feminist, and that is when I'm in my power because I'm expressing me in that space. And as a submissive, I have the power, and there is communication, and there is knowing of self and the other person and them knowing you, and trust, so that you are fully expressing yourself in a way that's true to you. So that is seen as being truly feminist. So my question to you is, how do you sort of see that? And reconcile is the wrong word, I think, in this situation, but how do you couple being a woman, being a powerful woman, and your relationship as you described it?
I have to say that after getting involved in the BDSM world and owning who I am sexually, I feel more powerful now and more like more of a feminist, more able to speak from my heart, from a place that I absolutely have the peace and the power and the control and the grace to get my messages across in a way that a lot of feminists get caught up in the angst of it all, and they're not able to communicate it in such a way that comes across as a universal idea. Instead, it comes across as matriarchal almost. You know, if you really look at the way that people segment out sexual preferences these days, you could boil it back down to a patriarchal system. And that's what feminists are really against. You know, like, isn't it all about just being able to be who you are and choosing what you want, or what you, stepping into your power and doing what it is that pleases you without discrimination, without judgment, without consequence? And we're allowed to do that here when we know what we want, when we know how to get it, when we use our words, and when we are in our power. Mm-hmm. There is nothing derogatory about BDSM. There is nothing demeaning about BDSM unless you like that. There is nothing that says the man has to be in charge. There's more and more female-led relationships these days, especially in the BDSM world. I think to be close-minded about being feminist and not allowing this to be a part of your repertoire or something that you explore, and I'm not saying Justine's being closed-minded. I'm just saying that the cap of being a feminist mm-hmm. doesn't mean that you can't explore sexual pleasure.
Right.
The opposite, actually, because
it means that you
should. Part of our bodies, right?
Right. Exactly. Yeah. That we should. That the true feminism in that is being able to, like you say, what do I want? What is exciting to me? What's interesting to me? Right. And having the power, even if the answer is, I don't like that and I don't want to do that, but having the ability to go explore it or question it or talk about it. And I think, again, with all of this discussion, I think there is always the one thing that I kind of want to add is that, you know, when we talk about talking to your partner and communication, there is no part of me and you can speak for yourself in this, there's no part of me that doesn't, as I say those things and I believe those things, that doesn't understand that that can be really hard to do, that we have been conditioned, not only as women, but sometimes just as people. I mean, it depends on what are you intersecting with being a man, being a woman? Do you have color? Do you have disability? Do you have where you placed in your family? Like, what are all these pieces together mm-hmm. can make things really complicated, and it doesn't make it easy. And as much as I say, you know, wave the magic wand, communicate, everybody. It's the world I want to see. It's the world I know that isn't as easy to get to. But if you never try, and I also understand that with each individual partner, it can be different. My relationships with different partners, the communication has been very different. And I tend to be one of those people who, if somebody else starts to get uncomfortable about something, my body reads that before I even like mentally take note. Mm-hmm. And I respond. So therefore, I will sometimes close down because the other person is closed down. If I have somebody who's really open, confident, and I'm not even going to say confident in there. I'm going to say, because I've had conversations with partners who are not confident or comfortable with their asking or the discussion they're trying to have, but they're open and they're willing and they're able to have it. And I know it's a safe place, even though we're not at perfect comfort levels, right? So I know that it's hard to ask, or I know that they are really putting themselves out there, but they're also doing it in a way that we're all open about it. So I'm just saying these things can look really different. We can put them in very simple language, but that doesn't make them easy to do. But the piece that's exciting about being a feminist or being in our power is finding our way to that. It's finding those ways to communicate, or those safe spaces to, or experience, grab onto those experiences and the help where we can get it, to be able to find us, because it is about digging through the pile of culture and what we've been given in our life and trying to do something maybe that's different or that is authentic. And that it can be exploring. That can be, I'm not sure about this, but okay, well, why not? And I'm going to go into it and say, I'm not sure about this. So
let me ask another question or two, actually. How is engaging in consensual sexual acts anti-feminist?
I don't think it is. When you add the consensual, right?
Right.
When you're consensual and communicating, mm-hmm. that's just being true to yourself. And what's more feminist than that?
And just because somebody is into BDSM, that does not mean that they cannot have sex in other ways whenever they desire. So, like, a question that I might get asked every once in a while is, well, do you ever have regular sex? What the hell is regular sex? I mean, it's just like saying normal sex. What's right. normal to anybody?
Right.
It really is such an intimate question. And between two partners, I get the idea of wanting to, and we talked about this some in the last part, was that if you're not with somebody where you're able to have the hard conversations, the negotiations, and the communication and trust that you need to really engage in BDSM, then you're really just playing. You're playing around with kink is basically what's happening. That's not a BDSM relationship. That's play. It's kink. You're in a kinky relationship. Mm-hmm. That stuff needs to be negotiated too. That should be communicated. Obviously, if you don't like your ass being spanked, you should let your partner know. However, maybe you like your clit to be spanked. I mean, maybe it's just your tush that's a little tender. Maybe you don't mind a little heavy nipple play. I mean, gosh, if people could see me, like, I'm rubbing, like, doing air guitar on my nipples while I'm talking to Judy here. Anyway, it's just like, it really, really boils down to what you like, what you're willing to do, what you want, what you won't do. It's that we talked a little bit maybe about the yes, no, maybe list.
We have in the past, and I was just going to bring that up, of I will attach or put a few of those on there, because there's multiple lists, but the yes, no, maybe list is an amazing thing. I think
communication tool.
Yes. And what it is, and you can add anything that I'm missing here. What it is it's a list of acts, and some, there are lists that are simply for BDSM, but there are lists for everything where, like, I like to be kissed on my neck, on my earlobe, on my stomach, you know, and then brings it down to more intense acts, you know, less G-rated, I guess. And so the point is you can sit with your partner and talk about those things. It opens the door to communication. What do you like? What don't you like? And the maybe part is the, I don't have a clue if I like that or not, but it lets your partner know, you know, if it is the, yeah, do you like to be, you know, slapped on your ass during sex? Well, I don't know. Maybe I do. Okay. Well, maybe that gives that person permission to try, but they know that you're not sure. So they know not to go full on crazy with it and to check in with you. Right. And I think those lists are fantastic. And I would say they are a great way before you get into a deep sexual relationship. But if you've been married to somebody for 20, 30 years, you need, pull you that sucker out. That.
You both need to do it.
Yep. Because it also opens the door to ideas. I've been in a room full of people who have looked at some of the yes, no, maybe lists, and it's fun to hear people's comments because there are the, oh my gosh, I never even thought of that, right? Like, so those are ideas. So it can also, if you sparks have been in a relationship, sparks ideas.
Yeah.
Right?
That, one of the biggest topics that I get a lot of times that people want me to talk about is, how do I keep my marriage alive? How do I keep it spicy? How do I keep my man, so to speak? I mean, they don't want them having an affair. They don't want them to want a divorce. They don't want, you know, any of that. They want to stay married. One of the best ways to do that is through one, communication, being open-minded is another one. And third is stay sexy, my friends. I mean, and sexy doesn't have to mean that you look like any certain thing or whatever. It's an attitude. And that attitude comes from a willingness to try, an effort, putting some effort into exploring each other still after all this time. And BDSM has been an amazing world for a lot of couples that get 20, 25, 30 years into their relationship, and they're just looking to bring the spark back or something. It's something new to try. It can start out very, very mild with a blindfold. Easy. Just putting a blindfold on and letting yourself have the sensory deprivation. Mm-hmm. Blindfold earbuds. A little bit of being tied up so that you can be teased or whatever.
Well, how many of those, like, what are those, I can't think of the parties, the sex parties that are popular now where they sell lingerie and stuff like that.
Oh, Pure Romance.
Pure Romance, that's what I was thinking of. You know, and they have like the
Chef and Pure Romance.
I love it. There we go. We've got a great event down in the Twin Cities. The handcuffs, right? They sell the handcuffs with the fluffy, pretty things on them. So they don't have to be super intense, but still fun, right? And a nice, safe way to start.
Yes, absolutely. You can start with a massage. I mean, there's different types of this. I didn't talk about this in the last one. And I revealed that I have been a dominatrix in the past. So I have been paid to perform dom work as part of my sexual exploration, as part of learning about discipline and edging and mental control. I am a sensual dom. So I am like the opposite of a sadist. So when you talk about sadomasochism, you know, sadist and masochist, mm-hmm. The sadist likes to inflict pain and the masochist likes to absorb the pain or be taken to their pain threshold. This is one of those places where you need to mesh up as a couple. You really need to know what you like and find your opposite to fulfill that need. Okay. I'm a sensual dom and I would never do well with a masochist partner. Mm-hmm. Because I could never deliver that type of pain to somebody I loved. Mm-hmm. But I would be open enough to let my partner go see somebody to receive that kind of pain as needed, because that's something they really desire and they really need as part of their sexual fulfillment and their identity. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, BDSM is not necessarily sexual when it's in a relationship or outside of a relationship.
Right.
Did I say that? That's kind of sounds wonky. In my relationship with BDSM, if I'm not able to fulfill my partner's needs, I know that it's not necessarily sexual for me to outsource that to somebody else. How did that come across a little better?
I think so.
Yeah. From the business perspective, like I was talking before, just like outsourcing that particular need and then knowing that my partner is going to come back to me and be thrilled that I supplied that for them.
And then you get to reap the benefits.
Yes, exactly.
Well, and a couple things to that. So we think of that as I can imagine people going, oh my gosh, that's horrible. That's, you know, I have a few thoughts and please share yours as well, obviously. But the whole idea of, you know, you might have a situation where you could go with your partner.
Mm-hmm.
And watch and be with them and watch them, or just be in the space with them, be in the space that they're gaining all this pleasure from, even if you don't fully understand it. Mm-hmm. Right. And the other thing I'm thinking of is we think of that as sort of, well, this person is like titillating you. But I'm thinking, have you ever watched movies made in Hollywood, people? We go with our partners. You know, if that person is into said person on screen, mm-hmm. there's a good chance. And, you know, so this way it's like, you're calling it out. It's all open. It's a lot more. I'm trying to think I want to say this. I'm not sure it's true or not, but I think it's true. So I think that it's probably truer for me that I would rather go with my partner to a dominatrix for who was supplying something that I didn't want to supply in the relationship than go to a movie with them for which there was a main actor person on the screen, you know, scenes that were designed to be titillating without me knowing it. Like if I didn't know that that person was into that person and we went to that movie and they had derived the situation to go so they could get all ramped up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm less okay with that than I am going to a dominatrix or some other worker where they're not necessarily, maybe they're not going to have sex with the person, but that they're supplying something that I can have. But I like the idea of being a part of it, right? Even if I'm not into doing what they're doing, to be in that energy. Does that make sense?
Of course it does.
It's, and I know for some people that might not make sense, I think, but I am saying for me, honesty is the trump thing. It is the honesty is the, what I want to shoot for. I want my partner to be honest. And that's not always, and I'm not saying that's always easy, but I'm saying that that's kind of where I ride those lines, that I think that these conversations that we're having, that we're trying to help people have, that is what we're trying to bring people to, is whatever it is. Figure it out together and communicate and figure out what you need. And then how can you negotiate to make that work for both of you and be creative about it. Mm-hmm. And don't be ashamed or afraid to ask. And again, that's one of the hardest things for people to do. Back to the yes, no, maybe thing. Use that as a tool. Use writing to each other as a tool. Whatever it takes to get the words out, right?
Yep.
Is huge. And then you said something earlier that I do want to come back to, because I can imagine some comments coming on this episode if I don't address it.
What was that?
You said we were talking about wanting to keep our relationships fresh and exciting, mm-hmm. and maybe the woman wanting to keep her man. Like, you hear that from your people, and I'm not, and I know that was your experience, but I also think I think we need to open the door to this. Mm-hmm. I think we need to open the door for the men to think how they need to keep their woman happy.
Yeah, but the woman, okay, a lot of times, and here we go with the feminine, I said that specifically with the feminist thing in mind, because we've sissified men so much in our feminist evolution over this past 20 years or so, especially, that men are oftentimes afraid to step into any kind of dominant role for fear of being accused of rape or abuse or whatever else. And they're afraid to talk about it with their wives because they'll be looked at as perverts or sick, or can you believe that this is what he wants now? And I kind of wanted to talk about the flip side, some ways that we can make this more acceptable in today's day and age. Like I said, the femdom situation where female doms are much more prevalent, the female-led relationship where the woman is the boss and sex comes as a reward for the man doing what he's supposed to do. Mm-hmm. And it's not that they shouldn't already. It's not that they shouldn't do it without sexual gratification or because they're the parent to this kid or whatever else, but it adds a sexual dynamic that keeps them lit. It keeps them engaged. It keeps them thinking about you all day long. Instead of it being a nagging situation, it's a sexual gratification. Mm-hmm. So there's ways to kind of tweak this and make this more feminist, more topped, and more from the female side, if that's what you need to do. To me, I'd rather just take away all of it. I'd take away the male-female role, the asexual role, the transgender role, the cross-dresser, everything, and just make it about the top and the bottom and make it just a great relationship. Whatever one person needs is in negotiation with whatever the other person needs, and voila, you have magic. But in relationships that have been going on for 20 plus years, how do you start the fire? Where is the friction to make the spark? Who's going to do it? That's really usually what happens, is who wants it bad enough to start the conversation? Who wants it bad enough to go down the excruciating path of having to build a partner back up, saying, you're who I want. You are worthy. I value you. I want to stay in our relationship. I don't want to go somewhere else. I find you sexy. And these can be both ways, male, female, does not matter. Mm-hmm. Just the appreciation, the willingness, the connection, and it has to be from both partners for BDSM to work.
Right.
And this is the disconnect. This is not happening as much as partners who start out in BDSM and have that as groundwork to work through their whole life. Mm-hmm. It's a point of communion almost, mm-hmm. where they may have an argument or a disassociation or a disconnect, and then they bring it back together through a BDSM scene or making love through BDSM. And then the lines of communication are opened again. The agreement of roles is established again. And then in the aftercare part, where you're cuddling and caring for each other and making sure it was a fabulous experience for both people. This happens all the time in BDSM. Just to be clear, BDSM has the beginning, the negotiation, the conversations. It has the actual scene, and then there's aftercare. This is not negotiable. Aftercare happens. It's supposed to happen every single time after play, that the top caresses, holds, cares for the bottom, brings them back to reality, lets them know they're loved and cared for, and that they did a great job, and that nothing bad is going to come of this. There's no judgment. They, you know, it's so, so vitally important. That oftentimes brings your play scene to a head of intimacy that can't be matched in any other way.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're bringing that whole trust and that experience
from beginning, middle, and end. It just wraps it up with a beautiful bow and makes you look forward to the next time. It draws you in that it's not a regret. You're looking for that again. You want to go back to it. So,
right. It's not a situation where, yeah, somebody does whatever, gives you your 49 spankings and walks away.
Right.
That's not okay.
Nope. She took me down. Oh, because we talked about this in the last one. I had a birthday. I went to an event. I'm generally a top. Sometimes I switch, but for my birthday, which is coming up soon, I decided to bottom at a party where there were several dominant friends of mine. And I got my birthday spanks. So I got 49 spanks, and it was done by my best friend, a female. And it was an incredibly intense, very sensual, not sexual. I got my spanks. She took me down off the rack, and then she wrapped me up in a blanket, and we went and sat on the couch, and I drank some water, and she talked to me and played with my hair and just was really giving me intense eye contact, making sure that I was okay. We were giggling about some of the things that we said to each other during the scene. You know, it was just like there's parameters around it. Like when you're publicly playing, nobody should be talking. Nobody should be making comments. There's no heckling. Mm-hmm. It's more of an appreciation for the art that's happening in front of you. So it's a real reverence for the exchange, for the power exchange. It's incredibly intoxicating, actually, to get into that, the flow and the subspacey kind of thing, those two ultimate outcomes. And you fed anybody that's watching, because they're generally voyeurs, or they're wishing they were on the rack, or they were delivering the spanking or whatever else. Everybody appreciates what's going on for the dynamics that are there. So it's a really intense situation, really I'm getting hot thinking about it.
So just describe the rack, just to give a clearer picture of what that means.
The rack, sometimes it's like a St. Andrew's cross, which is the big cross with the eye hooks on it at various places for cuffing your ankles to, cuffing your hands to at different heights to keep them out of the way of a flogger or a whip or something. So it's for protection. Sometimes, like the rack that I was on was a very large, if you pictured, say, a pergola or an arborarium, the big wooden things that are built sometimes for vines to crawl through outside.
Oh, right.
That's what the host of the party, he's a 24/7 dominant man, and he has this in his living room. And it's just this very beautifully built black rack with clamps all over it to put different things in different places and make it work for, like, you could hang a swing from it. It was super versatile, very strong, but it was just this 8-foot rack. It's like a giant U upside down.
Okay. Sure.
Held up with big bolts and stuff. So it's super secure. And, yeah, that's basically it. It's just a place to kind of string you up so that you don't have the control. Mm-hmm. You know, you take your hands and feet away and you have to use your words instead. And that's usually, you know, for beginners, they say to use like stoplight. Green means go. I really like it. More, please, whatever. Yellow means, all right, that's getting a little rough. Can you change a tool, you know, change your implement, change what you're using? And then red means that's it, I'm done. And when you say red, it brings the play to a complete stop. It's not like, oh, I'll give you a few more slaps, you know, a few more. Nope, it's over. Mm-hmm. So, but like if I was getting a swat in one particular quadrant of my butt cheek and it was bothering me, I could say yellow, could you go to the other side, mistress, you know, that kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. And then she can choose to do so or not to do so. But, you know, I just let her know that side's getting tender or whatever. So again, communication during the play as well is really important.
Right. Okay. And I want to go back to the one thing I said, and then I've got a new thought that I want to throw in here. Okay. So the reason I asked about your statement of saying the woman wanting to keep her man is just because I wanted to bring up that it might feel one-sided. And I know that I know you had thought processes around that. But for somebody that might feel one-sided about, wait a minute, why do I have to be the one always to work to keep my man? Why doesn't he have to work to keep me? And I was watching, this came up on an episode of Queer Eye. I don't know if you watch Queer Eye. It's a great show. Anyway, have you ever seen Queer Eye?
I think I might have watched one episode. Okay. I don't watch TV, so.
Okay, I don't hardly either. I have like a show that I work my way through. But so, but they went to, so Queer Eye is a group of five gay guys who go visit people and they do a massive makeover on their life. And they went to go see this gentleman. And they were talking about having the gentleman, basically they made the comment of, let's get you looking sexy for your wife. And, you know, because we're always talking about women looking good for their man. And there's not enough men looking good for their wives. And I was like, that's just, you don't hear that very often. You don't, you know. So I just thought, I just wanted to make sure that that sort of cultural concept wasn't reinforced where it's always the woman who isn't doing enough, where sometimes it is the man who is not doing enough. And that's also a cultural thing from him too, right? Like there's a lot of cultural issues at play here, but to be able to find a way to open the doors to say, this is what I need as a woman. I'm not getting what I need. How can we do this? Are you getting what you need? How is the sexual relationship working for the two of us? So,
mm-hmm. So just to be clear, on my Facebook page on the Power Exchange, I have like 600 followers and 550 of them are men. So I talk to men all the time about what they need to be doing better in their relationships. And I talk to them about mental concepts, not necessarily, you know, physical things. It's about deep conversation and about looking at how they're approaching things and how they're looking at stuff and how their relationships might need to be shaken up and things. So mm-hmm. I deal with men a lot, but the women are the ones who want something to change. The men are often reactive. Something happens and then they're like, oh, why did that happen? Like, I find that men are often like led around by the nose, you know, like the bull with the ring in the nose, mm-hmm. like they're pulled around by their wife. Mm. And it's very, very rare that you find a man that's a dominant man who wants to fix his marriage. mm-hmm. If he's a dominant man and he's checking out of his marriage, he leaves. Mm-hmm. If it's a submissive man, which a lot of men are today, they stay stuck because they don't know how to change and they're submissive. So they don't make the moves. Mm-hmm. It's very, very interesting. It's very hard to wrap your mind around when you think about how dominant women have become in relationships. Mm-hmm. And we want it to be different, but we won't give the men the power to be dominant. And we've trained them to be a certain way.
Well, and also getting the whatever it is, the chutzpah we need, the confidence, the power, the knowing it's okay mm-hmm. to express that we would like something different.
Yeah.
Or that we need something different. And
oftentimes that happens so far into a relationship mm-hmm. that it's really hard to unlearn. Mm-hmm. And we're not the most patient women on the face of the planet. I mean, gratification works on both, you know, for everybody. We're all trained for immediate gratification nowadays. That's right. Why so many people are attached to their phones. Mm-hmm. And engaged in their relationships.
Right.
So.
And for, you know, to give women a little bit more, well, I mean, okay. So to give women a little bit of a, and again, easier said than done, I know. But I know from having some conversations with men, when their partner finds a way to bring up some of these things about, wouldn't it be fun if, or hey, what about trying this or I would be interested or opening up, that usually that is welcome. And interestingly enough, and this is where I think there's so much miscommunication with men and women, a lot of theories go through my head just from the experience of talking to people, but there's men who are afraid to bring up that they would like something different or they like something even slightly kinky. Women are afraid to bring up if they want something because that's a fearful thing in the relationship, because as women, we're supposed to be nice and sweet and not want sex. But statistically, you know, according to studies, they basically says that, yeah, women are actually looking for a lot more, and I know you've talked about this too, that women are really a lot more interested in kink and doing things a little differently than men realize. And it's that, how do we open up that communication, which I know is exactly what you're trying to do with the work you do with people. Right. How do people get in the same place or have that safe space to say, I would love to, or God, I'm not sure if I want to, but dang, I want us to work better.
Oh, we are going to stop there for today, and we are going to continue this cliffhanger next week. Patricia's going to answer the question. We're going to talk more about the difference between BDSM and abuse and how those things can get blurred and what to watch out for to have it not be a blurry issue. We're going to talk about values, sexual values, emotions, intentions, and a bunch of other stuff. So come back next week and continue the conversation. Until then, you can check out the rest of the episodes of the podcast at sexmatterspodcast.com. You can hop on the email list. You can support us on Patreon through there. Check out the levels and the goodies. And of course, don't forget to submit a question. If you have any questions, topics, ideas, or feedback or commentary, please don't hesitate to go to the website and submit that to us. You can also leave a review of the podcast there. We would greatly appreciate that. Of course, you can also connect up with Sex Matters on Facebook. Patricia can be found at thepowerexchange.co. That's thepowerexchange.co. She is also on Facebook. Her book is called Crossing the River Called Suffering, where you get to hear about this journey she speaks greatly of today in our podcast. She also talks about the events and courses that she has available there as well. You can connect with me, Judy, and my weekly podcast at wellnessrenpodcast.com. That's the Wellness Renaissance podcast at wellnessrenpodcast.com. I definitely invite you to check it out. We have over 100 episodes there, many topics of many different aspects of our well-being. And yes, some of them do have to do with sex. So please join us next week for the continuation of this conversation. And I shall leave you with a riddle. I think Patricia will appreciate this one. What's long and hard and has cum in it? A cucumber. Take care. See you next week.